1,2,3
This episode is brought to you by Maru Mori. This site has everything you need to learn Japanese. It's an all-in-one guided, gamified Japanese learning experience with the aim to take you all the way from absolute beginner to language mastery. And the best part is you can start anywhere. So check out marumori.io and register.
Thank you, Ben. Any Japanese study for you recently?
Man, I've pretty much given up.
Given up?
Yeah, because I...
You're kind of like at a level where you can say everything you want to say.
Well, I did that N2 twice, failed it. Both times got around 50%. And I think the last time, 60.
It's not too far.
It's not too bad. It's not too bad. But then the last time I failed was, I guess, pre-COVID. And it was quite demoralizing after it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to try again next year. So I bought a couple more textbooks, but I haven't like even opened them.
Yeah, but have you ever like taken a course to prep for the test before you've taken it? Dude,
nope.
That makes a world of difference because they put you on a study schedule and it's very geared towards the test and they can help you improve. Like when I passed EQ, I took a lot of – I failed it a bunch of times and I took a course each time before – But there's a school in kind of the West 18 area.
That's the Maruyama school, right?
That well, there's a few over there. One. There's actually a few over there. But the one SIL, Nihongo or something, Shima Sensei, like I've been going there from when I first got to Sapporo. And then, I haven't been there in a while. But to pass EQ, I took like a 3-month test there. There's like one other girl in the class with me. It makes a huge difference. Yeah, I guarantee if you're at 50% right now and you took one of those classes, you would pass it for sure.
How much are we looking at for the course, roughly?
I can't remember. I mean,
back then,
I would imagine the price has gone up probably.
Yeah.
But it's not that expensive. It's reasonable.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, if you're really trying to pass the test, and I always look at like money spent on education as like, I don't ever look at it as like a bad decision, basically, for myself.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I'll do it over the winter time because I got like 2 months off. Like in February and March, yeah. So maybe might do that. Yeah.
When you come to Thailand with me instead,
oh, might spend the money on that instead, right?
Or do that. How's it been going? What you guys been up to?
Well, I got a couple of things.
All right,
three things actually.
Three things that happened to you, or are we talking about some news stuff?
Before we get to our main topic.
Before we get to our main topic. Guess what I ate on Wednesday night, last night. No, Tuesday night.
Burger King.
No.
Burrito.
Teppanyaki.
McDonald's again.
Is this the one with the flaming onion ring
Man,
cones?
I'm going to tell you right now, I was a bit disappointed that they didn't do the flaming onion volcano.
Did you request it?
I actually thought, are they going to do it or not? But they didn't do it. So it was probably...
Because you went to like a high market one, right? I'm guessing.
Man, it was 30,000 yen a head.
Whoa.
That's a lot.
Including alcohol?
Not including alcohol.
Wow.
Shit.
So that was for the course. And I didn't pay for any of it. I got the five of us and we got bought dinner for.
What's the occasion?
Nothing.
Nothing. That's nice.
Yeah. Where was it?
Premier Hotel, just over there, across Nakajima Park, 30th floor, 28th floor.
Oh, yeah.
Really good.
So a nice view as well.
Yeah, it was nighttime though.
30,000 a head.
Yeah,
wow.
It was pretty expensive.
Was it worth it?
Well, I didn't pay, so I guess so. No, it was good, man. But I was thinking, man, like, how good can food get? You know, if you're paying $800 for a meal, is that way better than a $400 meal?
It's like wine, isn't it, as well? You know, like $10,000 for a bottle of red wine.
I can't imagine a steak getting any nicer than the one I had.
The one that was 30,000
in your mouth. Or
yeah,
was it the best steak you've ever had?
One off.
But it was probably like a small cut, though, right?
No, it was a dip, man. I got so full. never eat Big Macs before going to. No, I didn't eat before, but they're about that big. Ben's skull.
So massive then. I say 12 inches,
see,
right?
That's the thing. That's a good size for a Japanese steak, but you show that to somebody like overseas.
Yeah, right. They're thick, man. Thick.
Was it Japanese steak or was it like Australian beef or something?
It was Japanese steaks, sirloin and something else. Two cuts of meat, I guess.
How many courses?
The first thing was just like this drizzle on this giant plate, and it was maybe raw beef or something with.
Ooh. Sounds good.
But it was like this on this gigantic plate, and it was just a smidge. There's a picture.
Oh, looks like a slug.
It just looks like condiment.
That's when you know it's fancy, right?
That's when you know it's fancy. Then we got an option of having swordfish. Crab, crayfish, or lobster, or abalone, which were still alive. They were still like,
and you like get to pick one. Cut his head off.
I picked the crayfish, the lobster, and then had an awesome. Well, they had the best sake I've ever had, the best Nihonshu I've ever had.
Yep. Was it smooth or bitter?
Oh, so smooth, man. Yeah. That was great.
Yeah, it sounds like quite similar to the place where I went for my. My anniversary.
We talked about you, Ben. Do you go to teppanyaki every anniversary?
No, that was the first time I'd ever been.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, my whole life.
Argument about it.
Oh, yeah. So you were right, and everyone else was wrong.
Yeah, I was right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I did that. I talked to a few people about the doll that I went to see.
Yeah.
If you haven't listened to two podcasts ago, listen to that. Then last week's, and now you'd be up to date. Do that right now. That doll, that some of its hair is in Hokkaido University, and they're trying to analyze it and figure it out why it's growing.
Really? Somebody at dinner tell you this or something?
I got contacts.
You stole a bit and took it there, didn't you?
How long has the hair been under study at?
I'm not sure. It's classified.
A couple of weeks.
No, like years, probably.
Did you confirm this?
Yep. The last thing, I ran into a buddy of mine, who I haven't seen, well, not a buddy, but a guy I know. And
So you don't like him then?
No, he's a good guy. Anyway, I haven't seen him for ages.
He's all right.
And I was like, what have you been up to? And he said recently he's been busy. He's found kind of a girlfriend.
Kind of a girlfriend.
Well, I don't know. And he's studying Shibari.
Shibari.
Now, Shibari? I know.
Is that a card game?
Burke.
Oshibori?
You're asking me, what's that in your little inner girl voice? Kinbaku. It's also known as Kinbaku or Kinbaku-bi.
Kinbaku-bi.
Gold?
No. It means.
Kin is silver, right?
The word Shibari.
To tie up.
Means tight binding, the beauty of tight binding.
So he's learning how to tie knots.
This is a bondage.
Like it's a bondage domination kind of, but it's a Japanese, you've said, it's like an art form, really.
Cruising down the street. My name is Noah, and I travel the backroads of America with my dog, Noodles, uncovering fascinating locations, history, and stories overlooked by the public. Explore the ruins where the first Salem witchcraft accusations were made. Visit a vast collection of masterwork clocks carved by farmers who rejected Henry Ford. Stand at the shores of the lake claimed by the ill-fated Donner Party. Travel backroads, pick up some history, and discover new locations. Hope to see you soon. Be good to each other. Where to next? Backroad Odyssey.
Oh, how they like kind of tie each other in weird body positions.
Yeah, and those videos you've seen.
That's what it is. Shibari is a Japanese word that broadly means binding or tying in most contexts, but is used in BDSM, bondage.
Ben, you're the expert.
Bondage, sadism, and masochism.
What's the D stand for?
Oh, so good. Domination. Oh, yes. There we go.
There you go.
There we go. So the reason we haven't seen your buddy for a long time is
he's been doing that,
going underground.
Well, it's in a bar. Apparently,
I heard there's a few places like that around Suskino.
Yeah, heard, a bondage right. place. Yeah, sure, Ben.
Yes.
Your photos are all over the place, by the way. I just want to get those down.
Well, I was wearing masks. How do you know it was me?
I think everybody kind of knows what that is. Listeners probably know what Japanese kinbaku is. They tie people up in complex knots and hang them from the ceiling.
Oh, everyone knows that. Yeah.
Haven't you seen Home Alone 4?
Is that with Kieran Culkin?
All right. Intricate patterns, usually several pieces of thin rope, often jute, hemp or linen, and this is generally around 6 mils. He was saying there's 10 stages to becoming a master tire. Is that the word?
Shibari master.
Yeah, shibari master. Yeah, to become a master. He's on level 5, and he's been doing it for about 6 months.
That's not long to get that high up.
Yeah, and he was saying to pass level 6, you got to tie this box. He called it the box knot or something with your hands tying behind your back and your legs up or something like that. And that you got to do that within 12 minutes.
You got to tie a box with a ribbon.
No, it's called
behind your back.
No.
With your eyes closed.
You get it, don't you, Burke?
Yes.
Thank you. All right.
Ben, I'll just say yes.
Just trying to give an image to the listeners, you know?
Right. So the illusion is to use the use of hemp rope for restraining prisoners as a symbol of power, in the same way that stocks or manacles are used in Western BDSM context. So I asked him, you know, do you enjoy it? Like, why you do it for, you know? And he said, it just makes me feel kind of powerful, I guess. Mm. So he might actually come onto the podcast.
But, so he is a sadist, is that right? Or is it masochist?
Oh, I'm not sure.
Yeah,
the one where you like to give the pain.
A sadist likes to give the pain.
Yeah, so he's a sadist then.
Yeah. Like the joke, the masochist says hit me and the sadist says no.
Good joke.
Thank you. Bondage as a sexual activity first came to notice in Japan. When do you think? How long has bondage been around Japan?
Oh, I reckon a long time.
Yeah, since the beginning of time.
Yeah, yeah. Samurai Let's period, see. Maybe.
When were ropes invented?
Jumon era, honestly.
Late Edo period, about 1600s to 1860s, and generally recognized as the guy Seiyu Ito was the recognized as father of kinbaku.
Seiyu Ito.
Ito. Mm. Isn't Ito string?
Oh, it's his name.
He's not related to the supermarket chain brand, is he? Mr. Seiyu.
Could be, Ben. Yeah. I'm pretty sure he is.
I know the company's been around a long time.
Seeing he invented it in 1600s, but he started studying and researching the art of binding a prisoner of war and is credited with the inception of kinbaku. Then in the 1960s, they started doing these live shows on stage. And I've seen one of these.
So in when?
1960s.
Oh, so that was when the actual kind of shows.
SM shows.
Started.
Including a large amount of rope bondage.
You've seen these, you're saying?
I saw one. Today, these performers are often referred to as nawashi, rope master. Or bakushi, meaning bondage master. So I saw one. There was a live show, actually. Our friend, the Three Skins, that band played. And then during the halftime break, before the next band came on, this guy came out and strung this girl up.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he was one of those masters.
I guess so.
The rope master.
Yeah. And then he kind of slapped the bum a bit. That was about it.
Burke? Where's this going? Matthew,
you were there, Ben. You were the dude getting
I would have definitely remembered that.
So
you're talking about you would have remembered if it have been done to you.
Yeah, yeah. Or if I was doing it to someone,
yeah,
for sure.
Anyway, after
especially live.
Anyway, after he let me go, after he untied me, I thought I want to do it. Try that, Ben. So, kind of need a partner.
I'm game.
Okay, I'm down. All yeah. right.
I'm a masochist. I like getting pain.
So I think it's 5,000 yen for 2 hours.
Five for two.
Is this a new sponsor? Is that, what yeah. is that where this is going?
Why do you think I'm hanging from the ceiling while I'm speaking too?
I just thought that's how you chill yeah. your place.
But it's kind of a weird thing to do to somebody. But if you're into it, you're into it, I guess.
I don't know. It sounds like there's a lot of people like to be on one end and others on the other.
Yeah, definitely a power kind of thing.
So is like his girlfriend the one that receives it? Like,
yeah,
likes
yeah,
being tied up.
Yeah, I think generally it's mostly the guys tying.
I mean, I didn't really understand that thing until I kind of saw it portrayed on Billions. Remember on Billions?
I was actually watching that today.
Oh, you never watched it before?
No, I'm on season 6.
Oh, okay. So yeah. You're pretty far deep into it. Yeah, that's the last season, right?
Season 7.
They just
finished recording season 7.
Oh, it hasn't come out yet.
No, it's out. It's done.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Guys, can we get back to my bondage stories, please?
I couldn't really stay into it after, what's his name, Damian Lewis? After
so he left.
Oh, don't did he come back? Don't tell me. I don't want to let you go.
I'll do it, Ben. Oh, he's ruin gonna come it.
Back. All right, man. I got to watch it.
His father dies or something. Yeah, anyway, that's the end of that. So, yeah, if you want to do this bondage thing, the Kinbaku, you can do it in Sapporo. I'm sure you can do it all around Japan. You just need to find a partner who's willing, and they do wear clothes when they do it.
And you pay 5,000 yen for an hour.
And then you can, I think they're generally naked when you do it in the privacy of your own home.
Oh, okay. Not in these clubs.
No.
You go to.
No, I guess not. You knew that, Ben, but.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know your friend did it, but it looks like we have something in common though, which is nice. Might want to introduce me to him.
Well, he says he's coming on the podcast, right?
Yeah, Mike, we should get him on.
So what is today's topic?
So thank you.
Are we moving on already?
Oh, sorry, Ben, you had something to say?
Well, no, this was the main topic, right? But I know Matt said he had three things to talk about.
Wasn't that one?
That was three, man. That was three.
And then you said
teppanyaki.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then you said you wanted to talk about something back before.
See what we have to deal with, people. Ben's goldfish memory.
You want to go straight into it?
What's up, Burke?
Are we moving on?
Yeah.
Yes. Let's do that.
Okay.
So what's the topic?
We're talking about Australia and Japan today.
Yes. 10 things Australia should adopt from Japan. So Matt, you've obviously read this because I sent it to you.
I did.
Were you surprised, any of these things?
No, a couple of them.
Did you agree mainly or not so much?
Yeah, a couple of them.
All right.
I'll tell you when you tell them.
Which ones did you not agree with?
Oh, just the ramen.
The ramen. The ramen.
You don't think
just don't agree with ramen. Don't agree with ramen.
Well, let's go through them. The one I did agree with was the public transport. Amen.
Oh, I did a deep dive on that.
Ooh, all right. So the public transport one was ultra high speed rail, right? Is what Japan has, and public transport in Japan is kind of famous,
best in the world, best
notorious
in the world.
For being maybe one of the best in the world. If I don't know where else could compete with Japan. I don't know if you guys have been anywhere that you thought the rail system was good. Not England is fucking terrible.
Yeah.
Always delays.
In Germany, the kind of local train system, I mean, the whole thing is pretty good. It's because Japan, local train system is pretty, like, rough.
like in like New York and stuff?
High-speed rail systems, super good trains, fast, on time.
Germany, of course.
Yes.
Yeah.
What about in America? They're kind of...
America is notorious for not really having, like, rail systems. I mean, they do. Right. But, yeah, it's nothing, nobody really uses it, and it's, like, old and dilapidated.
Yeah. Well, only
had,
subway
like, derailing,
systems,
train
right?
derailings are, like, yeah. Subway systems in the cities, like, yeah. Obviously, New York is pretty well-known, but
right.
You can't say Japanese subway systems, like.
Well, yeah, Japan's impressive, yeah. Right?
I can only speak for Sydney, but, yeah, it's always delays, 10, 20 minutes, when I was living there, anyway. So yeah, it was a bit of a joke. I never took the buses.
Yeah, England's the same. It seems like everywhere apart from Japan has really bad rail system.
I mean, it's there on the and if you miss it, you're like, shit, I missed the bus. I missed the train. Then you go, oh, I got to wait 4 minutes.
Yeah. Well, this is probably something that you guys probably haven't ever thought about too much, but actually a very unique part of Japan's rail system. They mentioned it only very briefly in this article, but the music that they play at stations.
Yeah, I don't think we need the music.
I don't think when you mention it now, I don't think I even have noticed it.
See, you guys don't even realize that there is.
No, I know.
It's a huge thing. There's like music for departure of trains. There's music for arrival of trains. But it's all kind of like part of this nudge theory. It's to help calm people. Because my friend told me.
It's death metal, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, they used to. my friends originally said like a lot of people think it's like to keep people from committing suicide.
Oh, like, I heard that
would make sense.
Yeah, but it's not for that. It's kind of just like they used to use like buzzers and bells and a lot of stuff like that. But they figured like people are already under so much stress that if they use music, it'll help calm people down. And this is like a huge thing. This guy in his like 60s has written 170 of these like jingles for train stations and stuff. Music.
So they have like a different jingle or song for every train station
that leaves. For every train that leaves, a lot, especially Tokyo stations. Tell me if you guys have ever heard this.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh right, yeah, 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 yeah.
So that's when the train comes in.
There's melodies for trains coming in. There's especially melodies for trains leaving in Tokyo and stuff. This guy has like huge Twitter following. He's in his 60s. He's a composer that's written like all these songs. Just to mention though, that song is actually the theme song of the 1972 Olympics. And that's why they play. Yeah, it's called the Rainbow and Snow Ballad.
Yeah.
Niji to, what is it? Yuki no Ballado.
Wow.
Wow.
That played at, where is that, subway stations as well?
Yeah, but I'll...
I just asked him that question.
What I just played...
I have the memory of a tadpole.
Dude, what I just played was at the subway station.
I thought it was
JR for some reason.
Tell me you guys have never heard this before.
Oh, ding, that's on the train.
This is actually...
JR.
This is JR, right?
Yeah, this is at train stations. It's actually the chime to help blind people find the stairs.
Yeah, all right.
But a lot of people told me in the past that this was like was supposed to calm people from committing suicide.
Yeah, because this always comes on when the train is approaching.
Yeah, but this is actually for the stairs, to tell blind people where the stairs are.
All right.
Yeah, so it's near the stairs.
It's also the chime that's constantly in Ben's head. That's all that's going on in there.
Well, I didn't even realize they were playing chimes.
Yeah, he hears the melody all the time.
He's looking off blankly. That's what's going on.
Yeah,
it's all I hear.
Yeah, but besides that,
even now,
did you guys know at Shinjuku they have like blue light above the platforms at the beginning, at the front and the end of the platforms? They have like blue light LED panels.
What is that for?
It's
stop people shooting up.
It's to stop people from wanting to commit suicide. It's supposed to calm them, yeah.
The blue lights?
Yeah.
Not green?
No. Not the green. That will make you go.
Well, because you know Japanese.
God, don't start.
No, but this is blue light, like the stuff you get from your screen.
Oh, okay. No. Light,
yeah. But they look like kind of bug zappers. But, dude, they installed these, and there was a study that showed.
Like, had it worked?
87% reduction in like suicide rates where they had installed these. Because they put it like, because a lot of jumpers, apparently, unfortunately, they jump with like the front and the back part of the station, where it's like less people standing and stuff. So that's where they're installed.
Fair enough, I guess.
Yeah. Dude, I just read this crazy statistic that's like basically in Japan, it's an average of one train suicide a day.
Yeah, right.
At least that was like in 2018 statistic or something.
Well, man, I was living on a crossing, and yeah, one night the train just stopped, and it's this freight train. It's like ding, 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 It was going on for about 5-10 minutes. I'm like, man, that's gone for ages. So, and I went down to have a look what was going on. And I walked around the side of the train. The cop's like, stop right there. Don't look. And yeah, some girl.
And obviously you looked.
No, I didn't. Well, I kind of.
Yeah, right. Peep around.
Yeah. And lucky I didn't. Yeah, I didn't keep walking.
That'd be disturbing.
Yeah.
Did he tell you what happened? Or you could just like,
yeah, he
said
somebody's killed themselves. And I read in the paper, it was like this 28-year-old girl. And it's just weird, man. I'm like 20 meters away, I guess, you know, watching TV, having a good time. And then just right across the road, some girl going through whatever she's going through, you know. And it's kind of.
Just never know, eh? Just never know.
And
what
that's
going
that story. Remember when we put the flowers there and the snowflake started coming down? That was that story, Ben.
Definitely do not remember this. Nudge theory, this was pioneered by behavioral economist Richard Thaler, who was awarded the 2017 Nobel Memorial Prize for his work, and Harvard Law School professor Cass Sunstein. The theory posits that gentle nudges can subtly influence people towards decisions in their own or society's best interest. So this is basically talking about like why you see arrows at train stations, why you see like the footprints on the steps of escalators and stuff. Like this is kind of all to nudge people a little bit. Okay. Apparently it works. Nudge for that raise, people. Moving on.
Let's move on. So you were talking about this ramen one.
No, let's right, just Matt. Go through the list.
All right. Okay. Well, the first one then on top of the top of this list.
Do you want to explain the background behind this story? It's an Australian who came to Japan and wrote.
Australian guy.
From Japanese culture.
Travel writer. wrote this in November this year. And yeah, he came to Japan and noticed some things that he liked and he thinks Australia should adopt. In Japanese culture, there's a huge amount of attention paid to the experience of others and how your own behavior affects that experience. That is why people in Japan don't eat on the train. They don't talk loudly on mobile phones in public. That's why they dress well. That's why they're unfailingly polite, even if you're clearly a bumbling tourist.
I'm going to say this isn't actually respect for others, because there's a word for respect in Japanese, right? Ben, Mr. Almost Into?
Sonke, that's it.
And people don't use that word lightly, right? When they say in Japanese, like, sonke shiteru,
I respect you.
Like, they don't use that word lightly. So I don't really think it's like, oh, everybody just super respects everyone around them. It's more about the...
They mind their own business.
No, it's more about the keeping the wa and just the overall balance in society. So it's like they're just trying to act what is in the best interest of not disturbing, like, the peace.
Matt, you think the Australians need a bit of this.
A bit of manners. I don't know.
Bit of war in their lives.
There's a nice war in Australia. You go around, people talk to you. You know?
Do they eat in public and talk loudly on their mobile phones?
Maybe. That's annoying, I guess. They can, you know, on trains, you don't want to listen to somebody speaking loudly. But at the same time, man, it's not a major.
What kind of society would you prefer to live in? One where people are kind of personable and asking, like, oh, how'd you do? Or like one where it's like you just like know what you need to say in the situation and you know what the person's going to respond. And as long as you say that and they respond that, then the wa is kept and you can go along with your daily lives.
Somewhere in the middle, I'd say. Because, I've been living in Australia for a long time, you know, so it's hard to say.
Yeah, that is a tough one. I kind of England. People do speak loudly in public, like on phones and stuff, and they eat in public, but they don't really talk to strangers. Like I heard in Australia, people kind of talk to strangers in public.
Or if you go shopping, how's your day?
Yeah, England, they don't do that.
Really?
No,
I quite like that.
I experienced that in America, and it was quite surprisingly nice. Yeah, like a shop assistant would just be like, "Oh, how's your day?" And I was just like really taken aback. It's like, why are you talking to me? Because in England they don't do that. But it was nice. You know, they're just being friendly, right? They actually being genuine, is it, or is it just the part of the culture?
Well, especially if you like work register or something, you're kind of supposed to maybe say something to make the customers feel like, oh, that was a nice store. Maybe I want to go back there.
Yeah, you would never.
So that is like a thing. They're trained to do that. They're not actually being kind.
And I don't think everybody does it.
They're manipulating the customer,
people
basically.
People kind of feel like, oh, if I'm going to do my job right or do you, good, well.
I have a question for you guys. When you go to an izakaya or a bar, do you do that to the waiters or waitresses? Hey, how you doing? How's your day?
No, never.
Try it.
Never.
They're usually pretty happy about it. Awesome. Do you speak English like you say in Japanese? Ego ga hanasimasu ka? And then you have a bit of a laugh.
Well, they have to, don't they?
Ben, do you think?
They're restaurant staff. These people, they're like trained
ben,
to like.
Don't kill Matt's dream, man.
To fake it, right? They're trained to like be your friend in a restaurant situation.
From birth.
Yeah.
From Kyokusan.
Yeah.
They're just trying to like.
They'll laugh at all your jokes.
Please the bumbling foreigner.
Well, that kind of goes on to another one here was izakaya culture.
Yeah.
What is an izakaya?
An izakaya is a restaurant / bar. It's a Japanese bar, really. It's a lot of rooms, usually, sometimes one big open room.
Counter
seatings.
Yeah, like.
Hold on, Ben.
Well, this article.
Hold on, Ben.
Sorry, you were saying?
Well, they serve small dishes, which they're
high quality.
But, yeah, you go as a group. Usually it's a drinking. You get a nomi horde, or you can drink for a couple of hours, $20, and you order lots of small dishes, which are
high quality.
So how would you say, like, what would you say the difference is between an izakaya and a regular bar, like a bar that you'd have back at home? In Australia.
A bar, you're standing up a fair bit, you know, sitting on high stools, not really eating.
Yep, none of that in izakayas. No standing.
No standing. You're sitting on the ground.
In a dirt field. Surrounded by hay. That's an izakaya. Sometimes you sit on the floor, right? Like maybe Caesar with your legs under the table.
Yep.
If you're lucky, they might have the hole in the floor, which is what I like.
But yeah, you don't move from that spot in a bar. You're kind of walking around. You might play some pool, go talk to some people or whatever. But in a izakaya, you're sitting at a table.
But they are very casual, like just like kind of bars, pubs back at home, like the atmosphere, the mood.
Yeah, you could chat very
loud.
Yeah, sometimes, usually very loud, yeah.
If you're a bunch of guys and there's a bunch of girls there, you could, you know, try and spark.
I don't think they do that in izakayas, though. They don't really talk to other groups.
Book? What?
Hey!
Hey!
But there are bars or pubs in like Sapporo as well, too. So it's not just like all drinking culture is at izakaya, basically.
Mm. That's true. But it is a popular spot for young people, I guess.
Yeah, for everyone. Like quick dinners or bonenkai.
It's just a place to eat and drink a lot, really.
Usually with groups in a casual, low-key, cheap environment.
And some of them are smoking. Most of them are non-smoking, are they?
I think now a lot of them are non.
Yeah, a lot of them are non-smoking now. They have like a separate smoking area outside.
And how long has the izakaya been around for, Ben?
I don't know. I'm guessing a very long time, maybe around the Edo period. They must have had izakayas around then. They drank a lot of, you know, sake and they had geishas and stuff to entertain.
But when was beer invented? 1890?
Yeah, but I don't think the Japanese were drinking beer back in the Edo period because they weren't letting in foreigners, were they?
No, it was. When's Edo?
Edo was, when is it, Bert? Edo. 1700s, something like that?
1600s,
maybe. Oh, there you go. The development of izakaya began around the Edo period, 1603.
There you go.
Good looking out.
Yeah. So do you think Australia should adopt izakayas?
Not really. We could have some of them, but not.
Don't really need them?
No. Well, you can have one as a Japanese izakaya experience. I think that'd be good.
So apart from that, you don't really rate them.
Well, izakayas are good and bars are good. They both got their ups and downs, I guess. So
no, choose one.
Which is better?
Bars.
Why?
Oh my gosh!
You can walk around.
Maybe you should go to a country that has more bars.
Well, yeah, I guess izakayas. Like, how often do you guys go to an izakaya? I don't go very often. And the only times I do go is probably with my wife when we go out to dinner. But I wouldn't go to Nizakaya with friends, really. Right? I'd, if I was hanging out with my mates, I'd go to a bar. Or a, you know,
we should go to Nizakaya next week.
Yeah, let's
but
do
that
it.
Means we've got to like sit in the same position and talk to each other all night. That's
we should
no
go
fun,
with other
right?
people. We should have a bonenkai, vij bonenkai. Seriously. And maybe just invite some other people.
So we don't have to sit next to each other.
But yeah, most of my, I would say, is guy experience is with like company dinners.
Okay. So we had izakaya culture. Matt don't think we need that. I mean, Australians don't need that. Well, they don't need respect for others. Plenty of that going on in Australia. Okay. How about this next one then? Commitment to quality. There is a word in Japanese that you need to know. Kodowari. It means loosely the relentless pursuit of perfection. And it's an idea that seems pervasive across Japanese society. Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. In Australia, do they have that similar pursuit for excellence or perfection? I mean, you see it in like clubs, right? In high school, how they train so much.
Yeah, but,
But
they're not the best in
everything. That's why I don't understand.
Because they're lacking that little thing, Ben. Bit of creativity. That little... You can over-practice, you know?
Yeah, you can't, I guess, you can't train creativity. Or you can't create
creativity. I think they're talking more about, like, product quality. Like, Japanese products being notorious for quality. The word Nihonsei, Japanese, made in Japan. A lot of people like made in Japan products, right? Toyota introducing the Kaizen production system focused on quality.
What is the Kaizen production? What's that?
That's like what a lot of manufacturers around the world started to introduce after Toyota. So Toyota created this manufacturing process called Kaizen, which basically means like constant improvement. So a lot of other car manufacturers, other companies in general just started to introduce this as like quality control, type of quality control and stuff. So
yeah. Number one best-selling car company in the world, I think Toyota. Prius is number one best-selling car in the world.
Speaking of which, the new design of the Prius has gotten much better than the old design. I don't know if you guys have seen that. I
haven't seen it. I didn't really like the old design.
No, the new one, I mean, isn't great, but it actually kind of looks more like a Tesla Model 3. But moving on to...
Yeah, well, hold on. Matt, do you think Australia needs a...
Better production quality?
No, everything's perfect
everything's
there.
Everything's perfect.
Yeah, what cars do you guys make?
Good ones.
Isn't Skoda Australian?
Shoes off inside. Do you guys wear shoes? Matt, do people wear shoes inside? And
we don't wear shoes in Australia. We float.
So you think you need to adopt this one, shoes off inside? I think every country needs this. So.
I don't know why people want to wear shoes inside.
It's a weird one, isn't it?
We've talked about it before. Like our Asian culture, we don't grow
exactly.
Like that.
But
what about your white culture? Did you, Matthew, how was the home situation? Shoes inside?
Yeah, we used to wear our shoes inside. What of it?
Even in the bedroom?
Yep.
On the bed?
What? Yeah, why?
Probably.
Why?
I don't
why
know
didn't you take
now.
Your shoes off?
In the we're bed. Lazy. We're just being lazy, all right? Is that what you want to hear, Ben? We're lazy people.
I mean, some people would say, you know, you shouldn't have your house too clean.
So that's what Australians say, is it?
but I'm just saying because it's like, you know, children getting exposed to more germs and stuff.
Yeah that's right. Yeah. I remember all my shoes in my bedroom. Like, I think, maybe Australian houses should invest in a genkan or an entranceway where you can put your shoes.
Let me ask you guys right now. Do you ever
smell shoes?
Get outside, forget something, have your shoes on here in Japan.
Yes. Do you take them off again or just walk into the house with them on?
Yeah. How about you? I asked you first.
Sometimes I've worn them straight in the house.
Yeah, I actually just did that yesterday.
How do you how do you walk when you're
very carefully,
like a thief, like a burglar,
like on tiptoes. Even though in your home country, like going to houses is probably pretty used to just wearing, but here in Japan, whenever you like forget something, I actually take them off sometimes, but not usually.
Depends if I'm wearing a boot where my laces are done up, then yeah. But if it's like slip-ons or something like that,
and then when you walk inside, you come, yeah, to get right, your feet man. Differently yeah. and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, walking on tiptoes. Yeah. So shoes off inside.
I
yes.
think it makes sense.
You think
man.
Yes, Matt.
Yeah,
they
otherwise
should do
you're
that.
Walking mud into the house.
Yeah.
Or could be worse. Right. Could be a lot worse.
It's your dog shit story.
Yeah, it happened to me. No, not
Red
me,
carpet,
my friend.
Remember?
Yeah.
Is that where the phobia came from?
Well, of dogs?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Next one. Chirping bird lights. This one, I don't really know what this guy was talking about.
Well, the road.
First of all, the article kind of described the crosswalk. Yeah,
it goes beer and vibrates.
Right. Yeah. Apparently, Billie Eilish put that in one of her songs. Eilish is her name. Eilish. Oh, sorry, not a fan.
Oh,
I mean, I just don't know. Maybe I would be a fan, but.
She's very good.
But she apparently put it in one of her songs.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's
after she went to Australia.
Yeah, right.
Are they really bad sounds? Like,
well, I don't know.
Because this guy says they're terrible sounds at pedestrian crossings.
What do they have in Japan?
I don't even know. Like when he was talking about it, I'd never noticed.
They have the bird chirping noise.
Have you seen the little microphone above the streets? That's where that sound comes from.
What's the sound?
It's a bird.
One of them is the no bird noise like tweet 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 tweet, and the other one is just like a beep. It's like boop 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 boop. But in Sapporo,
I might know the beep one. Yeah.
Well, in Sapporo,
yeah. This is the Australian one, all right.
Oh, it's like a woodpecker. That is really annoying, isn't it?
Ah, it's not that bad. I mean, there's worse things going on in the world than noisy.
Well, in Japan, they have a baby bird,
yeah,
or a cuckoo. Sounds yeah. like.
No, this would not work in Australia because we got a lot more wildlife.
Yeah. So people just be like looking around the whole time.
It'd kill millions.
Well, do you guys know in Sapporo, which one do you think? Because a lot of the roads are like either north, south, or east, west, because Sapporo is like designed on a grid, right? So which noise do you think goes north, south, and which noise do you think goes east, west?
I don't know, the tweet, what? Tweet one.
Goes what?
Northeast.
That's right, north-south.
North-south.
You know
what? Well, the baby bird one goes yeah. north-south.
You
so if you're crossing north to south, it's the baby
you know why
bird.
That's helpful? Because you're like trying to remember like which way is north, which way is south and stuff.
Oh, okay.
You yeah, can, right. I don't think that's why they were here. I don't know, maybe it is. But yeah, Sapporo is one of the few streets or cities in Japan that was like kind of designed almost perfectly on a grid. So a lot of streets, they go north-south.
And then the cuckoo is... east west is that what you're saying? But
no, that's saying that the bird noise is north south east west. The other one is the beep noise.
All right, okay.
All right, next one.
All right, next one. Commitment to snacks. Yeah, well, this one I think every country is pretty hard
committed
commits
to snacks.
To snacks, right? What a so. Aussie
Tim
has
Tams,
a lot,
isn't that what you guys have in Australia?
Oh, Tim Tams, man. Yeah, Sayos.
What's that game?
Yeah, Tim Tams.
What else you guys got? What other snacks you got?
We got lots of stuff.
I think
man.
Japan, they do snacks.
Oh, no,
well.
No, man. We got barbecue shapes. They're bloody awesome.
Barbecue very, shapes.
That sounds good.
Are they crisps?
Huh? Yeah.
What are they, crisps?
But I mean, commitment to snacks. I don't know what that kind of means. But man, at high school, they got like sugar bread and the fattiest, horriblest stuff in the canteen.
They
it's crazy.
They go pretty hard out on bread in Japan, right? All the
sugar.
Yeah.
It's actually one of them on here, right? The last one is about the bread.
Choco croissants. I like choco croissants. I mean, don't they have them in other countries
yeah,
too?
Yeah, you guys don't have those in
Australia?
No? No. So, yeah, the choco croissant is what this guy recommends Australia should adopt too.
Good. I agree.
Agree. Yeah, chocolate croissant.
Well, the bread shops in Japan are pretty serious about their bread, right?
Yeah, I'm not a fan. All right. I'm not a fan.
All right, let's get to it then. The bread here is not as good as back home.
Oh, you're talking about just like bread in general? The bread shops have delicious bread, though, man.
Doesn't beat
Well,
but do Australia have like the bread shops that they have here, like Don Goody and places like
don't
that?
Don't need them.
So they don't have them.
We're good, man.
Yeah. Happy with your white and your brown bread, right?
No, there's a huge, huge range of bread and they're thick, you know.
But do you have melon pan? Hey? Do you have that? What was the thing we ate last week, Burke, that you bought? The
strawberry thing.
The yeah, strawberry the
Ichigo,
jam,
Ichigo
butter
Ichigo
bread.
Jam and margarine rolls.
I never knew those existed until then.
Yeah, and I'm sorry. Like, I didn't know it was going to create problems for you at home.
No, I just got home and I just like, you know, my wife's quite health conscious about bread and stuff. And then it just made me think like she would never eat this. And I told her about it. And I was kind of surprised that you ate it too, because I always think that, Burke, you're quite healthy too. Like, you're in good shape. You work out.
Super snack, dude.
Man. Yeah. So you just eat a lot of...
With the clubs, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I did. Yeah. The crisps sneaking all day in.
Crisps.
Yeah.
Hey, man. I mean, what are you going to do? You know, like, a lot of clubs don't serve food.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the bread is good. The bread is good in Japan. I do like the old going to Don Goody and, you know, testing out different ones, because they always have new stuff all the time as well, like the weekly special that they've just concocted up.
Well, if that's what he's talking about, yeah, maybe a couple of those around wouldn't hurt.
But you're happy with your bread?
Oh, yeah.
With your bread. Yeah.
Okay.
Ramen.
Ramen. Well, ramen's not actually on this list. That was a part of quality, the commitment to quality. Yeah.
Have you ever had a bad ramen? What did you want to say about ramen? What bad thing did you want to say about ramen?
Huh? No, I'm good. No, I like ramen.
Do you have good ramen in Australia?
I don't know. I haven't really.
They don't have good ramen in England.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think they have a couple of the big ramen chains in Japan that they've tried to get going in England.
Ichiran.
Yeah.
It's like when I went to Taiwan, they were like, oh, we're going to go Ichiran, man. You know, it's really good. And I'm like, I didn't even know what it was, because like they didn't have it in Sapporo at that point. And went in there and I was like, oh, this is like a Japanese ramen shop or something. You know? Apparently, I mean, it's huge, but they just never had it in Sapporo, so I didn't really know about it.
I think it's like the most common popular ramen branch in Japan, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's it, pretty much, on the list. We've come up to that time. Anything you guys want to add? No? All right. Well, thanks for joining us, everyone. Hope you learned some things from us, and maybe you would like to adopt some of these things in your country if you're not from Australia. Catch you again next time.